Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Jeffrey Swartz, together with my compatriot, Brendan Berry. We are both professors of law at WMU Cooley Law School, Tampa Bay campus. And before we commence, I am obligated to say the following, and that is that the opinions and the things that Brendan and I set forth during the course of the next hour are our opinions and our opinions alone. They are not the opinions, necessarily the opinions, of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School, its faculty individually or at large. Good morning, Brendan. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. It's cold and it's rainy.
Yeah.
And it's like a really bad fall day up north. But you know what?
Right.
It's okay. I like it. I went walking in the rain this morning. So it was good. I walked to PT. I walked home in the rain, and it was fun. I actually enjoyed it. So how are you doing? You all right?
That makes one of us. Mm-hmm. I'm not liking this at all. This is a little too cold for my liking.
Oh, well, I'm really sorry about that, but I miss this stuff, okay? I grew up with it. And like you, the difference is that I've been out of it now for over 40 years. You've been out of it for 9, 10 years. So it's a little different for the two of us, but that's okay. You know, you'll get tired of the hot and the sand and palm trees. Mm-hmm. I promise. It'll wear off on you.
I know, and people are listening saying, oh, poor you guys.
Yeah, right. No. I'm not asking for any sympathy here, okay? None at all, okay? I understand. Yeah. This is a wonderful place to be in the wintertime. I want you to come down here and tell me how wonderful it is when it's 95 degrees, humidity to match, and all you do is go from your air-conditioned house to your air-conditioned car to wherever you're going that's air-conditioned, and vice versa, and you know, breathing outside is like, you know, I don't know, chewing on razor blades or something equally stupid.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but that's okay. That's okay, you know. You didn't have to put up with it so much. I guess it'd be all right. It's hard to laugh today, honestly, and I think you probably feel the same way. It's a feeling that many of us have had in the past that, you know, the world is going to hell in a handbasket. China is pushing the edge of the envelope in the South China Sea. So we send in aircraft carriers. In the Mideast, they're firing missiles towards areas where there are Americans because the Iranians want the Houthi, and that's not Houthi in the blowfish, that's just the Houthi, to take over Yemen. We are preparing ourselves to deploy military people, and my son is in the military. Military people to Eastern Europe. And to a certain degree, I relate back to 1945 when I want to say that Patton was right, okay, when he said, we got the forces, we're ready to take them, we can beat up on the Russians, let's just get rid of them now. You know, he wanted World War III to start right there and then. And he might not have been wrong, actually. But forgetting whether he was right or he was wrong, we are about to enter into a phase of direct confrontation with the Russians, and it's going to be difficult to watch. We are doing what we have to do for Poland and Estonia and Latvia and Lithuania. We have to do those things. They are members of NATO. And it's a question of how far we go with the Ukrainians, whether, you know, we are now pushing Putin to the point of, does he back down and look terrible, or does he fight and lose 30, 40, 50,000 Russians, which would be the end of his reign over Russia? So it's like the hell, you know, like, you know, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. And we've been through this before. We've been pushed to the limits before. And thank goodness that the person sitting in the White House is not Donald Trump, who would have just said, sure, you can have Ukraine, you can have Bulgaria, you can have Romania, you can have Belarus, you can have all of those countries. Let's give you what you want, just make sure I get what I want, which is Trump Tower in Moscow. So, you know, I just, I'm glad that we have somebody who understands world order in the White House right now, and I'll just sort of leave my opinion on that. If you have an opinion on it yourself, Brendan, please set it forth.
No, that's nope. I agree with everything you said. That's
wow. That's why I like you so much.
Yeah.
You agree with me so much. I just love it, okay? You know, if you were a woman, I'd marry you, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Okay. We have a lot to talk about today. A lot of things are going on, a lot of very important things. But we're going to do our usual start of going after whoever we feel like going after today. Today, I'm going to start with a woman by the name of Ginny Thomas. And you're about sitting there going, who the hell is Ginny Thomas? Well, Ginny Thomas is the wife of one of my favorite justices. I say that sarcastically. Clarence Thomas. She has been a leading figure in his life and in conservative politics back to the early 80s when she became a mid-level Republican operative and congressional aide. For a while, after all those years, she left politics and reemerged in 2009 as a founder of the Tea Party before she was forced to step down because people questioned her political involvement while her husband was a justice of the Supreme Court. Now, that doesn't mean she gave up conservative politics. Oh, no, not Ginny. Her role as de facto Tea Party lobbyist and until recently as head of a Tea Party group that worked to defeat Democrats last November show a new level of arrogance of just not caring that the court is being politicized and how that undermines the historic image of the court. Now, the truth of the matter is that this court is extremely politicized. And she is part of the reasons why it is that way. She is deeply involved in far right-wing politics. Her involvement with far right-wing organizations is not hidden and extremely well known. This is a woman who was solely responsible for George Herbert Walker Bush nominating her husband to the United States Supreme Court, touting him as a good black conservative justice, and you need to replace Thurgood Marshall with another black justice. And she sold that. And she is responsible for him being there. She is, for all intents and purposes, the political brains of that marriage. Because I, for a long time, have said, I don't think Clarence Thomas is that bright. I believe he's a product of what he is about to overrule, which is affirmative action. And he is such a product. Even among congressional Republicans, that Thomas boasts she has close ties, this idea of her new firm, Liberty Consulting, ranged from puzzlement to annoyance. I mean, people were getting annoyed with her. She just is out there. And the problem is that she is not alone. We look at her because she is more visible, but she's not alone in this. I have mentioned before that Amy Coney Barrett's husband is now working for a major law firm who sells the idea that he can lobby a Supreme Court justice. Now, that is legislating. That's not judicial action. In being a judge, and I was one, the ethical standard is, it is not just the impropriety. It is the appearance of an impropriety. Many organizations who filed amicus briefs or were parties to actions in front of the United States Supreme Court were represented as a lobbyist by Jenny Thomas. And yet, Justice Thomas doesn't think he needs to recuse himself, or there is no such word, disqualify himself. I don't understand this. If he were sitting on the circuit bench, if he were sitting on the district bench, he would have to get off because there's a code of conduct that those judges have to follow. And for some reason or another, justices of the United States Supreme Court don't think they're bound by ethical standards. Because who are you going to go to complain that they should have gotten off? God? God's not going to get involved. So the truth of the matter is that what we see right now in the politicalization of the court is not just the justices. It is the people they are married to who get to give pillow talk lobbying, conversation at dinner lobbying, breakfast just before oral argument, lobbying. And this is just wrong. And it has to stop. And fortunately, Jenny Thomas is now under a lot of scrutiny again. How unfortunate. This has been the subject of two articles, one by Jane Mayer, who I believe published this in the New York Times, and Politico, just in the last week. They even illustrate with the same pictures. It has to stop, and it has to stop now. I guess they're going to turn down my application to be a member of the Supreme Court bar, I guess. I'm waiting for that to happen. Okay. And that's what I think. How about you, Brendan? What are you thinking these days?
Well, I got one thought that's not very serious and another thought that is. But I'll begin with saying what I think is that Joe Biden was right. It's all the buzz this morning and last night that he called Peter Ducey. I'm not going to say it, but I'm wondering, have you two seen this, with this blow up over Peter Ducey?
Pronounce it correctly, please.
Okay. Well, Peter Ducey asked at the end of, a press availability, shouted a question at Joe Biden about inflation. Is inflation going to be a liability during the midterms? And Joe Biden deadpanned an answer and said, no, it's an asset, right? Obviously being sarcastic. We need more inflation. And then he turned to somebody and said, what a stupid SOB. But he didn't say SOB. He actually said the words. And this was on a quote-unquote hot mic.
He actually didn't use the word stupid. He didn't use the word stupid. He just said, what an SOB.
No, he said stupid SOB. I'm gonna stand my ground on that one. Oh, yeah. Yep. There's a couple, just a couple minor points about this. But first of all, you have people now moralizing, on CNN, Jake Tapper and Stelter, say, oh, but, he's a journalist and Biden shouldn't have said that, whether it's a MSNBC journalist or a journalist, you can't talk like that. You know what? Can we get past this, please, in the mainstream media? Fox is not a news outlet, and Peter Ducey is not a journalist. And that was not a question. Right? Journalists try to get information. They try to get to the truth. Do you think inflation will be a liability in the midterms is not a question. It's obviously a statement. It's designed to provoke. There's no information. If you're going to be a journalist, why don't you educate people as to why we have the inflation that we have now? What caused that? And let me give you a hint. What causes inflation is limited supply when demand stays high. That's how capitalism works. In case they didn't take Econ 101. So what caused inflation? What's causing the inflation right now is limited supply. Everybody knows that. What caused the limited supply? Well, what caused the limited supply is a disease that is sweeping through the country. Because we can't get 40% of these people around us to take this seriously, get a vaccine, get boosted, and let's get this thing over with. Because we had a president who was telling people it was a hoax. That's why we're in the situation we are in. It has nothing to do with Joe Biden. Joe Biden, like most Democrats when they get elected, is just there to clean up the mess. So if you want to be a journalist, ask questions about that and get to the bottom of it and educate people about what's going on.
Well,
so that's number one.
You can only educate those people who are educatable. Educatable.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know, if they aren't listening, you can't educate them. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they're hearing what they want to hear, they don't want to hear what they don't want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So they ignore it.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Yep. Yep. And yeah, so Fox is where they go to get their preconceived notions. Affirmed. But there's also now among, the political right, they take every opportunity they can to try to portray Joe Biden as a doddering old fool who doesn't know what's going on. First of all, if you just listen to the things that Joe Biden says, he is sharp. He is smart. He has lots of experience to lean on. I don't know where this is coming from, but of course that's their meme, right? Is that so now it's the alternative take on this, or one of the takes on this is, well, you know, he didn't even realize, he doesn't know where he is or what he's doing, so he didn't realize that the mic was hot. Let me tell you, he knew what he was doing. He had just finished answering another reporter who had asked the question.
Yeah, he did. Like, he knew it was hot. He knew the mic. He knew the mic was hot.
He knew it was on. There was no reason for it to be off. There were still reporters in the room. They were still shouting questions. He was still engaging with them, and he didn't whisper it. It's not like he said it under his breath. He said it out loud to the people around him, with reporters and microphones in the room, and I applaud him for it. I think he was exactly right. And Ducey got what he deserved. And although, again, you're going to have some journalists lecturing and moralizing about it. Look, we got to get past this point where on the right, they're allowed to fight however they want. But on the left, you have to be polite. That's just not going to work anymore. It's time to take the gloves off. So that's what I think. About that.
Now that's interesting, because I was watching, or not watching, I was listening this morning to CNN as I was walking, and Brian Stelter comes on, and there's a lot of things that Brian says and does that have a great deal of merit. But for some reason or another, he took a position that the language that, first of all, they applauded Biden for calling Ducey. Sorry about that. You know, it's a Freudian slip.
Okay.
Called him immediately after the press conference was over and apologized for, the profanity, which, you would never, ever, ever hear Trump do. He would never apologize for anything. If he ran a red light and ran into the side of your car, he said, it's your fault because you shouldn't have been driving there.
Right.
I got nothing to apologize for. That's assuming he still knows how to drive a car. But it's It was Seltzer goes out there, and he's talking, and he says, basically, it's beneath the presidency to use that kind of language. Okay. I got two words for you. You is one of the words. You can figure out what the first one is. You know, you don't have any right to say it's beneath the presidency. This is a man who is as polite and as straightforward, and at least he let you know what he was thinking. You knew exactly what he was thinking. And that's what I want from a president. I want to know what the president's thinking. I don't know about you. I don't like secrets. Okay? I don't. So I got no problem with this. Speaking of secrets, by the way, let's talk about memorandums. I like to talk about secret memorandums. Do you like to talk about secret memorandums, Brendan?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a secret is no fun unless you can tell somebody.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Okay. All right. So now that I know about this secret, let's talk about it. Okay? Like nobody else is. Duh. We have talked about how dangerous January 6th was. And it was. It was terribly dangerous. It almost worked. It almost worked. But it didn't. But what did we find out? That was only one prong of this coup. It is the reasons why, in the end, Trump fired his Secretary of State and replaced him with an incompetent sycophant to become the Secretary of Defense. It is, as we will learn, the reason why Bill Barr left. We finally found how low Bill Barr will not go. And, of course, what we're talking about is this executive order that was drafted, more probably than not by Sidney Powell, because it names her as the person who's going to be the special prosecutor to handle this, to literally use the military and nationalize the National Guard so that the states couldn't use the National Guard to interfere with the seizing of all of the voting machines, all of the paper ballots, all of the mail-in ballots, everything relating to the election. And here's the good part. The military is supposed to analyze all of this and come up with an answer. Because Trump knew he had a lot of allies and still does in the military. It was to be a military coup. And it was to be such that there were no there would be no counting of the Electoral College until this was completed for 2 months. And this coup was to take place at the end of December. Now, Trump's term runs out on January 20th, right, at noon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He planned on staying president. Now, no offense, but no. If there is no president on January 20th, who would be president of the United States? Nancy Pelosi. I don't think they thought this one all the way through. Of course, they were really hoping that Nancy Pelosi would be dead, which was the job of the Oath Keepers, to find Nancy Pelosi and kill her. That was one of their jobs. This was a multi-pronged coup. And I believe that what we're going to find out is that this is the reason why Bill Barr left, because this was a bridge too far. He would not go along with this. And I don't know that it would have worked because the Joint Chiefs of Staff would never have followed an illegal order. They are not forced to resign. They would have taken control, and now we really would have had a military coup. This was more dangerous than January 6th. Nationalizing the National Guard so that the state governors could not use them to protect their ballots. We could have seen the National Guard facing off against regular Army troops over ballots. And Donald Trump declaring himself the winner again and then tearing up the Constitution, whatever was left of it. This is dangerous stuff. This is stuff that you only read about in Tom Clancy books. This is stuff you only see in banana republics. No offense to people who live in South America, by the way, or Central America. In banana republics. I know they hate that term. Seriously. And the idea, the even thought process that this could succeed scares me. And to think that Mark Meadows didn't know about it, I'm sorry. I know this is profanity. Bullshit. Rudy Giuliani's making up elector slates and filing them with the National Archives. Claiming, well, you know, if we win in Congress, we have to come up with an alternate slate. That's up to the state to do, not just a bunch of people who get together in the state house and rent a room. This is real. I mean, the prongs of this, the depth of it, the insanity of it. And yet there are people who still support those things happening. Do you people really don't care about voting? And I don't want to hear, all I care about is I get to keep my gun. No, you don't. I'll say it for the umpteenth time. They will come for your guns as soon as they have the power. If the military takes over, I promise you they'll be knocking on your door, taking your guns. They'll search every home in America, every crevice in America, without warrants, to seize your guns. Don't ever believe they won't, because they absolutely will. I'm apoplectic over this. Absolutely apoplectic. And all we need is one person who says Donald Trump knew about this. And if they don't indict him for sedition, I don't know what sedition is.
Mm-hmm.
This is literally, in writing, sedition. I don't know how much more proof you need. Lock him
if
up.
I may interject.
Throw away
I'm
the
sorry,
key.
Go ahead.
Go mm-hmm. ahead. No, go ahead, Hesse. Go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking, I am overwhelmed. I'm practically in tears listening to all this because you're so correct. The problem is that people in the higher echelon of media, not a little place like us, but big operations, whether it be the Washington Post or even the New York Times or Chicago Tribune or the LA Times, whatever, they are not explaining it well, but maybe that's because the reporters don't have the capacity to comprehend all of this.
Oh, I think they do. They just like to look smart. They just like to look smart.
Is that what it is?
By using terms and talking about things in higher echelons. And that's not what the American mm-hmm. people need, because what do I always say? We have two generations of just literally stupid people.
Yeah, you're right.
You have to get down on the ground, and the military has, you know, have you ever read military manuals, Ezzy? Ever read a military manual?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Yep, absolutely.
Military manuals are written for people with fifth grade educations.
Yep.
We have to start explaining things to people as if they're fifth graders. Stop talking. This is why they get angry at the media as being, media elites.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Stop talking like elitists and talk real. I mean, literally talk real. I mean, listen to, Tucker Carlson. I won't call him what I usually do. And listen to what he says about Russia. He talks to people in simple language. He doesn't try to get above their heads. He talks to them like they're fifth graders. Russia, good. Biden, bad. Okay? I mean, that's the way he talks. I mean, why are we angry at Russia? Russia's our friend. This is all Russiagate all over again. I mean, literally, that's the way he talks. And that's why he gets through to his audience. And that's why sometimes CNN, and I know MSNBC, does not get through to them because they talk too high above people. And they get pissed off because they don't understand what they're saying, so they change the channel. That's why, Hizzy.
Yeah.
You got to talk to them like they're stupid, because they are. And I'm offending more than half the people in the United States, and I don't care. I would look at them and say, self-awareness is half the battle. Be aware that you're stupid, okay? Accept that you're stupid, okay? That you don't know anything, and listen to the people that are trying to explain it to you. Sort of like Lucy. Explain it to me, Lucy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you disagree, Brendan? I don't think you do, but...
No, that was the unintentional genius of Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not a bright man, but that actually turned out to be an asset.
That's true.
Right? Because
that's true.
He can't speak. He cannot communicate at more than a third grade level. He's incapable
right.
of it.
He knows five or six superlatives, and he uses those.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I remember hearing him say once, and I just couldn't believe that this was coming from the President of the United States. He was going after somebody, and he said, I don't like her. You know why? Because she wasn't very nice to me. Not very nice. Not nice. And I thought, what grade are you in? I've never heard an adult talk like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I like these. They're
not nice to me. Not nice to me. What? But this is the way he speaks, and he connects with his people because of it. Because that's the depth of their right. Of their intellectual rigor right there. And
that's the mob boss in him. That's the mob boss in him, okay? He talks like a mob boss because most mob bosses are what? High school dropouts who become mob bosses because they're just badder than everybody else with a very simplistic, one-dimensional thought process. Talks like a mob boss. Fifth grade language. My almost four-year-old grandson, has a bigger vocabulary than Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you use the word "that's superfluous" with him, he'd say, "What does that mean?"
Right. Well, he pretended to know what it meant.
Yeah. It's not that he doesn't know how to read. It's not that he doesn't want to read. He can't read. I believe he's incapable of reading a document of more than two paragraphs without getting a headache. We literally have a functionally equivalent, functionally ignorant president of the United States who suffers from serious personality disorders. I mean, how much worse could it get? This is the ultimate nightmare.
Yeah.
And they're criticizing Joe Biden for the way he speaks because he has to fight through his stutter. So I think that the January 6th committee has its work cut out for it. I believe that Bill Barr – well, by the way, Bill Barr's cooperating. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Do you know
why? And has been for a long time.
Do you know why? He has a book coming out in 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
His explanation of trying to save his reputation, such as it is.
Right.
But I believe, he and Mark Meadows are the two guys that can put Donald Trump in a 12x12 at Supermax in Colorado.
Really?
Yep. Because they can say he knew all about the plans for January 6th. One of them can say that, and the other one can say, I told him that he couldn't pull this off, and he was intent on pulling off this national emergency, activating the National Guard, taking over the government by force, and that was a bridge too far for me. That's what the other one can tell. Those two can put this guy in Supermax. His kids can put him in Supermax. You have to have live witnesses saying, I told him that. This is what he said to me. Because he never puts anything in writing. That's why this executive order just absolutely astounds me that he would ever sign such a thing. He had to know that was sedition. He had to have been told that was sedition. He had to be told that he was going to get arrested if he tried to keep the presidency after January 20th. He had to know that. He had to know he was starting a civil war. He had to know that because he had to have been told that. And that all we need to do is find those people who told him that. And I think two of them are Mark Meadows and Bill Barr. The problem is Bill Barr has no credibility, and Mark Meadows is Mark Meadows.
Mm-hmm.
If I were Kevin McCarthy, I want him to get arrested. Because Trump has ideas. People have put the idea in his head that he could be the Speaker of the House. That would put him in line for the presidency. And then all of a sudden something magically terrible would happen to Biden and Harris during the last 2 years of their term. And all of a sudden, he's president of the United States again. Anybody ever talk about that one?
No.
All they talk about is that he could be Speaker of the House just to make Biden's life miserable. No, that's not the plan. He doesn't want to work that hard. He wants to be Speaker of the House so that he is second in line to the presidency and become president when something unfortunate happens to the president and the vice president. Donald, please sue me for that. I look forward to it.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
Well, you know, and
I write. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just, you know, as sitting here talking about this and listening, it's what's most remarkable about all this. Because yes, you're describing things that happen in broken countries. Is that masses of Americans, millions, tens and tens of millions of people, are only thinking this, right? I'm paying too much for a gallon of milk. I'm paying too much for gas. I'm going to put these Republicans back in charge.
Yep.
Not thinking about what that means. You know, you have Republicans saying they only have one goal if they take back power, and that's to impeach Joe Biden for what? I have no idea. But that's what they're promising to do. Their only agenda item is to go after Joe Biden.
Right.
You have Newt Gingrich out there now, say, a former Speaker of the House, Republican Speaker of the
God,
House.
Oh, my God, yeah. Who's insane,
now,
by
now,
the way.
Completely lost, jumped the shark, to say the least. Out there saying that if Republicans retake power, these Democrats are going to wind up, the Democrats or the members, I should say, of the January 6th committee are going to be prosecuted and wind up in jail. Prosecuted for what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Republican idea of a crime is this. Disloyalty to Donald Trump. That's sedition, as far as the Republican Party is concerned. That's treason.
Right.
Right. Treason is not to betray your country. Treason is to betray Donald Trump. And Donald Trump has said that about people who betrayed him, that they, when he was president, that they were guilty of treason. That's the Republican idea of a crime. And I just don't know how the United States survived for as long as it did. I'm sorry to talk about it in the past tense, but I think we're about to see the unraveling. Because I think Republicans will retake power. I think Americans won't be thinking about what that means. And when they retake power, that'll be the last time. They'll never give it up again.
Right, and I happen to agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, agree with that. I think that if McCarthy becomes Speaker of the House and there is a Republican president, then our republic is done. I mean, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that to be true.
Well, will the findings with regard to the insurrection, will that change its demeanor, or is it too late of the nation?
I don't know that it's too late. I would say this. I think that it's going to depend upon what's done with those findings.
Uh-huh.
And to a certain degree, I think that the disclosure of the people that are giving the information, and we do not know everybody who's giving information.
Mm.
I think there are people that have given information that they're protecting for one reason or another. People who have given information they did not previously have. Documents that they did not previously have. And I think that they're protecting those people from the kind of attacks, either physical or publicity-wise, until they have to service. And I believe that they are truly going to have to furnish those names so people understand the credibility of the information that they have and where it came from. I think part of it also is not to give any hints to Trump or anybody who's still with him in any higher position, to give them any ability to start attacking the credibility of those people by starting a public relations campaign against them. So I think there is that there. But there are so many of them now that there is safety in numbers. They cannot go after everybody. They cannot say that everybody's lying. Even people like Stephen Miller know you can't say that the whole army's out of step but you. So I'm not sure. But it's how they bring it out in the spring, how they present it, who they present it with, and the documents that they choose to use to support their assertions. And then the next question will be, what is Merrick Garland going to do with all of these documents and all this information that he already knows about once they become public? Is he going to be able to withstand the pressure? Or is he going to give the people of the United States what they so long for? And that is the end of Donald Trump. And when I say the American people, I'm talking about the massive majority of people in this country. That's going to be the issue, because it really is going to be on Merrick Garland's plate. This guy is the savior of the republic. He's the one person who can do it. And the right district judge who holds Donald Trump in custody, pending trial, cuts off his telephone services except for to his lawyers, lets him know that you are being recorded when you meet with anybody. You shall not pass notes and you shall not give anything in writing. And we're going to know what you're saying. And if you involve yourself in politics or attempt to pass messages to the public, we'll cut those people off too. You are not going to run an insurrection from inside a Metropolitan Correction Center. Question is there a judge who has enough chutzpah to do that? And I think there are, especially in the District of Columbia. That will save our country. But if Donald Trump gets to pick the next president, even if it's not him, then we have a problem.
Gentlemen,
let me... We have an even bigger problem if it's DeSantis. Yeah, go ahead.
There is a caller on the line. It's probably for you, so let's see if we can bring that caller in.
What do you think? Yeah.
Good morning, caller. Would you be kind to just give us your first name?
I'm Joshua. How are you guys doing?
Okay.
Hello, Joshua.
How
are you,
sir? You have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I'm a little bit confused about the American way because, you know, we were founded on never trusting any politician ever. So why is there a new normal?
I'm not sure
if
that's true, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm just
I don't
asking,
think we were.
Is there a new normal? Yeah. I'm just asking. Is there a new normal where we have some faith in some politicians some of the time? I mean,
that
we already know that they lie.
You know, yeah, I think, number one, the idea that all politicians lie, I think, is inaccurate. I know a lot of people in Congress, and they're good people. I wouldn't want to know them, and I wouldn't want to be friends with them, and I wouldn't want to support them if they were not good people to begin with. Things are happening. Things are coming to light that make us distrust, for example, people in Congress.
Yes, sir.
And I can't blame you I can't blame you for your lack of faith. Whether it's politicians who are selling stock when they find out classified information, or buying stock when they find out classified information, especially about COVID recently, or congressmen who just don't know.
Well, more specifically, people like Nancy Pelosi that vote on stock over decades and become worth tens of millions of dollars when she's voting on things. I'm just saying, we already had this a long time ago. Politicians are always going to be deceitful. I'm not saying that every politician is a terrible person, because people are people, no matter where you're at. And some of them, I'm pretty sure, are pretty decent people. Some people go into office actually wanting to help the situation at hand. I'm just concerned that most of them are trying to fill their pockets, and we're just kind of stuck in the middle as citizens. Does that make sense to you, sir?
Well, I understand your discomfiture, okay? I really do. And I understand how you feel. My experience has been based upon and I'm 72 years old. I've been involved in politics since I was 19. And I've known a lot of people from United States senators down. And I will tell you, that most of them, if not an overwhelming majority of them, are people who, as you put it, get into politics and because they have a vision. They have a thought process of what they think is right and wrong. And most of them, I truly believe this, hold true to that. Unfortunately, because we've become so tribal, that it's hard for them. And part of the problem is that being a congressman in and of itself is a very influential, powerful, and profitable way to make a living. And they're afraid of losing their jobs. So they bend at times. Bending isn't a bad thing. Compromise is not a dirty word. It's how this country became what it is, through compromise, not through hammering people, but through compromise. And I think that there are bad apples. There are people who line their pockets. I know the allegations you've made against Nancy Pelosi, and I can't address them because I don't know the particulars. I don't think you do either. That's just what you hear. But I would counter with you that Nancy Pelosi was fabulously wealthy because of her husband before she ever went to Congress. On the other hand, Mitch McConnell was, in relative terms, pretty much an average, you know, middle-class, upper-middle-class guy. Through marriage and other things, he's gone from, in his time in the Senate, from a net worth of $2 million to somewhere between $30 and $35 million, just over the last 10 years. So one has to wonder how. Mm-hmm. And I agree with that thought process. I really do, Josh. Okay? And it is something to be concerned about. Okay? But just
we'll keep Josh on the line, but we'll continue so you could finish your thoughts, as we only have about 8 minutes left. So thank you, Josh.
Okay.
I'll keep you on the line.
Thank you, Joshua. I appreciate it very much. I appreciate your thoughts.
Yeah. Let me just chime in too a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you say you know, people get into politics, you know, because they have a vision and they have things they want to accomplish. Well, I think one of the things Americans should be very suspicious of is a political party that appears to have no agenda except to take and retain power.
Which party would that be?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just, we know what they're against. They're against Joe Biden. They're against anything he proposes. But if anybody can identify, this is the political party that used to be on the side of democracies around the world, right? Russia is bad. All things Russian, right, are bad. They have completely turned on their head. So to the extent that the Republican Party ever had an agenda, it is gone. The only agenda that I can discern is the agenda to install Donald Trump as permanent dictator in the United States. I don't see anything else. The other thing I would point out, when you talk about politicians lying, it's not that politicians lie, it's that people lie. I shouldn't say everybody, right? But most people have things that they will lie about. They'll lie about their sex lives. They'll lie about their finances. They'll lie, right? So politicians are people, and people lie. So politicians are going to lie. I'm going to come back to the idea of false equivalence. Not all lies are equal, okay? If somebody lies to you about how much money they have in the bank account, or about whether they had a fling with X, Y, or Z, right? That's one thing. If somebody lies to you about whether Iraq has weapons of mass destruction and gets us into a war that kills hundreds of thousands of people, that's not the same kind of lie as when Bill Clinton said, "I did not have sexual relations with that woman." Okay? Those are on completely different planets. When a political party lies to you in a massive way about an election being stolen, that's a big lie. It is appropriately called the big lie. It's not a little lie. It's not just a people lie. when a political party tells you not to believe scientists, right? Don't believe science. Don't believe economists about the economy. Don't believe scientists about science. Don't believe doctors about medicine. Don't believe lawyers about the Constitution. I'll tell you what the Constitution says. When you're hearing those kinds of lies, we're in an order of magnitude well above, you know, the types of stuff we're talking about. So I think it's actually kind of dangerous. I mean, I would agree to the extent, you know, not to get yourself beholden to a politician in a cult-like, you know, right, a cult-like loyalty. You know, to that extent, right, you don't want to do that. I mean, a nation of laws and not of men. But that's just not the way it's going in the Republican Party right now, and it needs to be called out. So that's my input on that question.
Yeah. Like I said, I think that there are some very honorable people who still serve in Congress. The problem is they don't get the publicity. They really don't. The bad apples, the obstructionists, the Kyrsten Sinemas, they get the publicity. By the way, congratulations, Arizona. You were listening to our show last week, and you decided to do something about it. Isn't that interesting? I bitch enough, and they do something.
Everybody listens.
I would certainly hope so, obviously. Why aren't we making more money? But with all of that, the truth of the matter is that there are still very, really, there's still very good people, true patriots that exist within our political system, and you cannot give up. That attitude that he has, and Josh, I understand where you're coming from, and I don't mean to criticize you, okay? But that attitude that you have is as much the downfall of this Democratic Republic as the overt actions of other people. Your attitude undermines confidence. What you have to do is find the people that are doing the right thing and be their fans. Promote those people. Speak of the good things that they're doing. And don't be one of the people that all you do, like the press, is look for the bad stuff. And I'm criticizing the press here. Stop looking for the bad stuff and start promoting the good people. We know there's bad people there. We know Jim Jordan's there. We know what a bad guy he is. You do not have to keep hammering it in my head. I know that Kevin McCarthy is an idiot. Okay? I know that. You don't have to keep hammering it in my head. There are bad people on both sides. You know, Dianne Feinstein has to go. I'll say that right up front. Dianne Feinstein has to go, and she has to go now. But you have to find good people, okay? The Marty Raskins, okay? The Liz Cheney, despite the fact I don't like her policies, she's a believer in the Constitution. Look for the good people and talk about them. Promote them and get your faith back. Because if you lose your faith and the people of this country lose their faith, we're done. Faith and belief. I got nothing else to add to that.
Yeah. Well, we got 1 minute left. You got anything to say in 1 minute? What can
no,
we cover
you
in
take
1 minute?
It. It's all yours, okay? Don't say I never gave you anything.
Well, you have a little bit more right. than a minute because I'm in the next segment, so I could truncate mine for you.
Okay, well.
Say what you want to say.
I'll end with this observation. I'll try to be quick about it. A law passed out of committee here in the Florida legislature yesterday that would ban any reference in schools to sexuality, right, homosexuality, bisexuality, transgender, gender identity, sexual orientation, anything like that. And this is another trend now among Republicans. I've never seen anything like this from Democrats. to ban the teaching of things that are real, right? To get young people thinking that these things don't exist, right? So you're not allowed to talk about racism anymore in school, right? Didn't happen. Not allowed to talk about sexual orientation or gender identity because, you know, doesn't exist. This is a crazy, wild ride that we're on. And it's full-on authoritarianism. I mean, that's just, right, when you've got politicians who don't know anything about anything dictating what's allowed to be taught by academicians, you know, that is obviously an attempt to take people's minds and to point them in a certain direction. And that direction that has nothing to do with reality and actual history. I just think that people need to start paying attention to this. You know, I say there's no agenda on the Republican side. I'm sorry, there is an agenda. The agenda is to whitewash our history and to target the other, whoever that might be. But I don't know if you saw that story, but I saw it yesterday, and I was just gobsmacked that this is going on.
What's happening, and you have to take a look at what's happening in Florida. It's really important because this is a guy who's practicing for being president of the United States in the state of Florida. He's practicing what he expects to do as president of the United States. He intends to make this a Christian country. He intends to subjugate the LGBTQ. Thank you. Q. Okay, don't forget the Q. Okay.
Right.
Community. Buttigieg's husband was on this morning and said that he is the idea of the law is to literally drive young people into the closet,
mm-hmm.
to subjugate them, to fill them with fear. For example, there is nothing wrong with parents calling other parents and going, did you know your kid was gay? And so his answer is, why don't we call other parents and say, did you know your kid was straight? It's an awful tell on your neighbor, teaching kids to bully other kids kind of law. And it is meant to create or be part of his attack on what he considers to be the boogeyman or the boogeymen or the boogeywomen, okay, in our society. He wants to create a police force just for policing, quote unquote, elections. In other words, stand there and intimidate voters. Insert themselves if some Republican raises their hand and says, this person should get thrown out of here. They're not registered to vote or they don't have the right to vote, whatever it may be, instead of doing what they're supposed to do is let them cast a ballot, which is provisional, which, of course, will mean nothing because all of the people back at the Department of Elections are going to say no to all of those once they see who they vote for. And they do know who they vote for before they make that decision, by the way. So my attitude is that you have to pay attention to this guy because he's as dangerous as anybody else out there. He wants to be the dictator of Florida. And the Florida legislature is going to let him. Because Florida's legislature, because of gerrymandering, is overwhelmingly... Being a Democrat in the Florida legislature is like, I don't know. It's like being covered in animals a smell and walking into the Everglades. and not expecting to get chewed up by the alligators.
Mm-hmm.
It's really awful. And it's frustrating for real people that there literally is no way that Democrats can ever come to power because of the way that everything's gerrymandered and the way that they isolate Democrats in enclaves. They'll never, ever, ever have the ability to have power in the state of Florida. And what's happening is a lot of people are leaving because they don't want to live on that way. Old people like it here because he cuts taxes. And anytime you cut taxes, you make old people happy. So you got to watch out for this guy. Okay? We used to think he was a buffoon. He's not a buffoon. He's a fascist. What did Maya Angelou say? When somebody tells you who they are the first time, believe them. And we owe Donald Trump for this guy because he would have lost his primary 4 years ago if it wasn't for Donald Trump. And his political career would be over. But Trump came in 10 days before the primary and boosted this guy to a win. He's getting his ass kicked. One more thing we owe Donald Trump for.
Yeah.
My list is getting too long. Okay,
mm-hmm.
We're going to start putting coal in
the
stocking.
We'll have to wait till next week then for more.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Time to get Patsy the show.
Thanks for the extra time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. All the best, guys.
All right.
What a pleasure.
All right. You too.
All right.
We'll
take care of yourself,
well.
Patsy. We'll see you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. You
bye,
do
friends.
The same.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, there we have it, folks. None other than Jeff Swartz, one of the professors from CMU Cooley Law School, based in Tampa, Florida, as well as his compatriot, none other than Brendan Beery as well. So there we have it. Let me move on to the next. Oh, it looks like we have a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. Are you there? I'm sorry.
I didn't realize
that there was some. Oh, you are the guest. Oh, you're the guest at 11 o'clock? I didn't realize it. I thought you were going to be on at 11:30. My mistake.
No, it may be my mistake. Let me. Hey, folks, this is coming.
Well,
to
it doesn't
you
matter. You're on
to...
now. You're on now, Mr.
Okay.
Bob Marone. But we should tell people who you are.
Let me double check my book. You know, guys like you and I have done this for so many years. Sometimes
I'm getting old, the number of years that have been tabulated so far may have caused
you
me
know,
to be just like incoherent
Mr.
mentally.
Mr. Harris.
Yes,
in fact, that's the subject of what I talk about tonight. Just so that people will know that Hezzy's correct, I'm actually scheduled for 11:30.
Oh, my God. And, you know, I haven't been correct in 72 years.
Actually, no. Well, but, you know, Matt, that was the subject of one of the things that I wanted to talk about today. But now,
okay.
But I don't want to mess
that
up
I was incorrect for 72
yet.
Years. Thank you very much.
Well, you and I are only weeks apart, Hezzy Harris. So we should be very, very
well,
careful.
My birthday's tomorrow. That's when I hit 72, assuming I last that long. So you never know.
You never do know. I have until March 25th, and then I catch you. So, and I
God
will be 72. But you know, people may as well hear how the sausage of radio is made. Now, is your 11 o'clock guest going to be pushed to the side because of me?
Well, I am the 11 o'clock guest, you know, My first guest pushed me off to like 10 minutes into my spot, and then here you are now telling me how I messed up or didn't mess up, but here
we
are.
No, you didn't mess
up. You know what? Life is exciting. It doesn't matter. Life is exciting. You know, we may have a little bit more time to talk and hash it out.
It's always been better to be early than late. And you know, I had two subjects. In fact, yesterday
Mom and Dad told me that.
Yesterday.
Until this girl that I wanted to see slammed the door right in my face. And she said, you're early. I got other things.
You know, we could even talk about that. But, you know, this is
I would be embarrassed to talk
radio,
about
so
all
we can
of
get
that.
A little. No, we can get a little salty. No. Since you brought it up, but anyway, folks, I'm gonna help him along now that I called too early and messed up. My name is Bob Marone. I am the anchor at Radio Westchester, a radio station that is right now in hiatus, due to COVID. But we do some podcasts and other things while we're waiting for.
And you're also
the
general manager too.
Yes, and
or is that just a title that means nothing? And the fact that you're the anchor is all that matters. The general manager is just a little bit deficient somehow. I don't get it. So how do we describe all this? You know,
okay,
you probably need a third title. I don't know what that title would be.
Okay, fine. Here's the deal. When you're did you ever hear the expression "chief cook and bottle washer"? Well, that
yes,
was
I have.
I had a couple of part-time employees. Oh. So it's like, would you wait? I got you now, folks. You're going to see two old guys go at it now. Who is the editor in chief of the Yonkers Tribune?
Oh, that's
Hello?
Me.
Yeah,
that's
who
me.
Is the anchor on Blog Talk Radio on the level? Hello.
Well, I guess it's me, but I don't know. I never thought of it that way.
Who writes the editorial articles?
Oh, that's
Who's
me.
That
so,
particular?
You know, what you're defining for me is that I'm a loser. And I've got a lot of
what
titles,
I'm defining for you
but very
is
little gravitas.
In fact, one of the I can say this about you and you can't. If there's anything you have, if there's anything, it's gravitas. And if there's anything you lack, it is not. Gravitas says, I know this man now going on 20 years, and we used to do a lot of stuff together back in the day and panels and stuff, and he is as serious as getting when it comes to gravitas and being serious about his stories, but as you can see, he has a sense of humor. He is as serious as a dreaded disease. So I was going over your paper. And some of the stuff, you know, this police commissioner was a fraud, this police commissioner, you know, you take on the heavies. But I took on one guy once, and I kind of won. I used to do you remember the former police commissioner of Harrison? I had a whole bit of him when I used to say he wound up getting arrested. I think he went to jail or is on probation for stealing, or at least for covering up his night job. But at any rate, that was a town for a while where the police thought that they were more important than that they got. He lost the message. We've got to have on the air, by the way, but where they lost the message that you work for civilian leadership always. And he used to bully the mayor around for a while. And so I used to do this bit where I'd say, I am the police commissioner of Harrison. Soon we will cross the Sound. Then we will take over Long Island. Move up the coast to Block Island. Rhode Island will be ours. And I used to love to do that. So one day he called in, you know. Hello, Bob. It's the police commissioner. I did a full Ralph Graham. But you go after these guys regularly. You know, the other people I went after, I'm very careful never to get a ticket in Mamaroneck because it's a wonderful village and town. And again, I never took the credit for being as having gravitas you have, but I went after people when they deserved it. And these
guys, you know what? I stopped driving many, many years ago. I guess through osmosis, I must have realized that they would probably stop me at every corner, you know. And I used to have a driver's license plate, and it said E. Hezzy, you know.
Yeah, really small. Why don't you just put here?
Everybody, well, nobody knew who I was.
Put an arrow.
Those were the good old days.
Put an arrow on the truck, on your car, and say, "Hezzy's right here, a bullseye."
Exactly.
Well, there was a murder you may remember. It's going on 10 years now. And of course, some of it, my tongue was in my cheek. Not that I do shtick, but I was trying to make a point, which is that in some of these Tony communities like Scarsdale and Mamaroneck and stuff, cops make six figures to carry a water pistol and give out an occasional parking ticket. I mean, it's they're Boy Scouts with guns. And they had this, and of course that's an exaggeration, but it's hyperbole, but it is fun.
Thank you for
but
saying
the truth
that.
Of the matter is, but the truth of the matter is, there was a murder where I think everybody in the town knew who did it. Okay. It was, I mean, it was one of those, it was a love triangle. The guy had slashed the guy's tires. He tried to beat him up a couple of times. One day the guy goes over to the guy. Well, he doesn't. I have to say allegedly. Let me be a good journalist there because he's never been tried or convicted. So the guy, this person is alleged to have gone to the guy's house where the girl they were fighting
Don't mention
over,
his name. Don't mention his name because you haven't
I know how to do this. No, I'm not going to mention any names. This is an old story.
Thank God.
They call it hypocritical. So the guy is in the house, and they're not sure if the girlfriend was in there or not, the girlfriend that they were fighting over. And we're not sure, they weren't sure if maybe the girlfriend even let the guy in. But suffice it to say the guy was murdered. I won't say how because of the point of the case. And I said this on the air before, so not to worry, Hezzy. And everybody kind of knew who did this, and they still haven't made an arrest. And I'm sure it's
I got to point out something. You know, you used a term which I've heard, and thank God I could even spell it. So I looked it up just because, you know, sometimes you got to look this stuff up.
Oh,
so
like
I could do two things at once, like listen to you and actually Google at the same time. So it's a gift. And
you see,
so
we're not that old, folks.
No, not yet. Not yet. That's next year. Okay, so it seems that apocryphal means a doubtful authenticity, although widely circulated as being true. What a perfect word. But sometimes I wonder if people speak above my grade level. You know, have you noticed
that
at all,
or
is that you're younger than I, so you still get
no,
it?
No, by a whole 6 weeks. Gee, no. Well, the word comes in handy because when you're trying to say to someone, and to be brutally honest, you know, as I understand it, the word's perfectly here because perhaps it is. I mean, all we really knew about it is there was a love triangle. The girl may or may not, we actually know that, may have been in the apartment with the victim. And the victim's tires were slashed by the person they thought did it. Well, all I'm saying is it doesn't seem like a case where you had to call in Stephen Hawking wheeling down 95 in his wheelchair to solve it. But what people do not realize, though, is that picking on the police when they make a mistake is something that you've always done. And I think need to be credited for. You know, which goes to, they're talking a little bit more about radio, and as he was asking me what I did, I'm the GM because I was building a full-time radio station when COVID knocked us out of the box. But I sometimes get asked, because I'm in a unique position, as I think are you, because you were in the travel business, but you were doing, I guess, travel journalism. I was a corporate communications guy. So 20 years ago, I went over to the dark side and went back to school. I went into journalism and wanted to do morning radio, both for the journey, I know. No, both to do journalism, but also to be funny and informative and kind of give it that mix. And people often ask me, what are the biggest lessons? And they're never happy. Because, I mean, I can get into the process of radio, but still the number one thing that I took away from radio and doing journalism is that the number one negative thing is that it really is who you know. That's number one.
Absolutely.
And the second
it's
one.
It's lesson number one, but most people don't learn that or they refuse to accept it.
And number two, and of course it's not in every case, again, that's the net of it. And the second,
it's a hierarchy.
Yes,
it is a standard. Even at home, you know, if you have your wife or your husband, they tell you what to do, and you capitulate.
Well, you know, when you're married, as you know, as a guy,
you take
orders. This is really funny, folks. Not that's right. The
this is a male
say,
perspective.
I do,
let me hear
no,
this.
The minute you say I do, you can feel that very first disc at the bottom, the beginning to dissolve. It actually dissolves.
Exactly.
You feel like a crimp.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the spine eventually erodes, has he? I want to, in
absolutely.
Fact, I want
well,
to come
you
up.
Know, welcome to the real world, Mr. Marone. I've been there, done that.
Some of us twice. But at any rate, the second
well, that,
thing, though.
That, you want to know the truth. The truth is that informs me about the political landscape because
yes.
I look at everybody as married to somebody who influences them one way or the other.
That's brilliant.
And then even the relatives capitulate to the hierarchy within, and we also undermine our own ethical standards based on that hierarchical standard. Isn't that
yeah,
amazing?
That is brilliant. You know, your
well,
own
thank
brain
you.
Is working very well today.
I took a little bit of water, so it's all loosened up now.
You know, we should do this more often. Anyway, the second
we
thing,
should.
People are waiting for my second great insight here. But this one kind of
okay.
broke my heart a little bit. I
what?
Always, you know, we grow up and we think that justice is going to be served. And
mm-hmm.
I became, and of course now she's finally out of Fox, and she was the beginning of it, was the former Jeanine Pirro. I was,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to say I was naive. I realized there was politics in those jobs. But again, this is to make a point, and it is to, I'm sure it's not true in every case, but I'm sure even people who don't subscribe to what I'm about to say, I'm talking about district attorneys and prosecutors,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure that some of them would never do this, but overall, I became disillusioned with the role of prosecutors and district attorney. I realized that for them, it's just another step on the political ladder. And they prosecute, depending on what the politics of the day are. I mean, now they don't want to prosecute anyone. But again, it's for political reasons. But the Jeanine Pirros of this world would prosecute, in my view, in Bob's view, this is an opinion, folks, they would
mm-hmm.
prosecute an innocent person if it got their tallies up. And my having seen those cases and watched politics do what it did, it really bothered me. So the second thing is the behavior of district attorney. In my view, if you're named an AG on the state level,
mm-hmm.
And maybe we could give them a pass, but once you become a prosecutor, a DA, you cannot run for office beyond that. I never thought of that. You just should not
well,
be
Well, I remember
to.
Losing faith in Jeanine Pirro when all she used to do in order to get headline news is she went after everybody that she thought was a little bit off, whether it was a sexual perversion or they
mm-hmm.
they looked at raunchy movies and stuff like that. And it's, well, that's all fine. Not that I agree
I
with
off,
what
the
their
way,
conduct is. Well, you know, I hear you. I know what that means. So I viewed some of these every now and then.
I had to throw that.
You know, moments of weakness. What can I tell you? And
no, but
whatever
Jeffrey
the case was,
Deskovic, whom we both know.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
She had his DNA for years and refused
mm-hmm.
requests to let it out. And what Jeff did, folks, if you're not familiar with Jeff Deskovic's case. This is a guy, now again, he was bullied into confessing to a crime he didn't commit at the age of 16, rape and murder.
Mm-hmm.
And to make a long story short, DNA came out some 5-6 years earlier into his sentence, life or whatever it was. He served for full 16
mm-hmm.
years. And to his lawyers, the Innocence Project had to help him.
Right.
The guy with the nose that looks like a penis. Anyway. But they
I don't
did.
Remember that.
Yeah, he was in the OJ case. He was from the Innocence Project, same guy. Really good people.
Okay.
Anyway, he to get more to the point, it was after she was out of office that finally they were able to get the DNA from the person who was alleged to have done it. And he was not
mm-hmm.
only acquitted, but this young man, after he got acquitted, went back to school, got a college degree, then he got a law degree, then he passed the bar, then he got the biggest settlement ever. And instead of, as I told him on the air once, if I got a settlement like yours, I would be in Acapulco right now with three Victoria's Secret models. What are you doing using your money to help people? And but that's
only
what he did.
Three, Bob? Only three? That's all
on a rotating
Really?
On a rotating basis.
Oh, on a rotating basis.
No, rotating basis. You know, like in hockey, they change on the fly as he.
Yes.
No, so anyway,
exactly.
That was my little humor at the time. But what a brave man. But you know what he did? And no people, because he had the resources. And he had the conviction. Well, he now runs the desk of the Innocence Project.
Well, I don't know. He had the resources later on, but I think that.
Well, that's my point. But he actually sued the cop.
He did get support. He got support from some people with financial capacity who underwrote his effort.
And frankly, he had a lot of support
to be
from
mentioned.
The press. Right. Has he, but of course, he had Murray Richmond, myself, and I used to have him on weekly or monthly. But the point was that he got to sue the cop and he got to sue the prosecutor for framing him, and he won. And there's so very little of that. But so that was the second thing. And the third thing that I took away, and that's why you have your own brand now on the level, is how the profession of radio, which I specifically did because I started in TV. That was the first gig I could get. It's turned from serious inquiry and discussion. Not that you shouldn't have fun, but whatever gives you a rating, you do. And politically, it has destroyed the national conversation. TV does it too, but radio did it first with Rush and Hannity.
Well, they may have, but you know, my demeanor has never been that way. I don't go for the hot, sexy item, and I'm interested in learning. So that informs me on what I report, and it's so pertinent because a lot of people are not familiar. And it's not that they're ignorant people. They just don't have a venue through which to learn about something different. I may write 20 articles, and none of them, capture the imagination of the reader or the listener, but then some of it will. And hopefully that catapults them to a better or greater understanding of self or other people.
Absolutely.
That's
well,
the intent.
We're both in the same thing. And I was very happy to when I was anchoring morning shows for 17 years, I guess, before I went on my own. I was very happy to do Honest Radio so long as I made an income, could pay the rent, which I did, and I had to do something else. Because that's, you know, and that was the beauty of doing it in midlife, by the way. I didn't come to it to make whatever money I made, and if I was going to make any more money, it wasn't going to be really
you already made it.
Well, I already made it such as it was. I mean, I made some business investments that weren't very good. But the fact of the matter is I put my daughter through college. I took care of my other responsibilities. And I wanted to do Honest Radio. And I don't know that I've ever said this on the air before. I'm sure I've said it on my own shows maybe. But I got to live a dream, Hezzy, that and it's not over yet. But if tomorrow, given our ancient backgrounds, if tomorrow the Lord took me, how many people get to live a dream? I mean, I always wanted to do talk radio. In fact, one of the things we need to talk about one day or at any time is what it's really like to change careers. So you never asked me, but one of the things I resent the most is you pick up a copy of the Journal News, right, and there'll be somebody there who cooks cookies in her basement. But again, it's the who you know thing. Maybe she knows the editor of the paper or her husband or her wife is a really influential person, sponsor. So they'll do this. I changed careers. After I brought up the three kids, I started selling cookies, and now I have Mama Gloria's cookies in the – That's not what it's like. You know what it's like to change careers? And I'm not saying this to you because you already know, Hezzy. Is you go all the way from the middle to the top wherever you are to the absolute bottom. And if you have any respect for the organization you joined, you accept your role. And what was it like? I was a stringer for what's now known as New York One. There's Staten Island, a venue. They had a station there. And you run around covering news stories with a camera on your back. And then when you get to, to radio, and I finally started getting paid, I got coffee for people. I made commercials. I worked 24 hours a week. And I'm not complaining. But you've got to work your way up and re-earn the whole damn thing. And if you love what you're doing, it's wonderful. Now, that's what it's really like to change careers. It's not, it took 4 years or 3 or 4 years before I got the morning show. And but I'm lucky, Hezzy. I got to live the dream. And I can't watch TV or read a book where I haven't been in touch with someone who is either in the news or was in the news. And I got to interview just about everybody I ever wanted to interview. But anyway, more importantly, we kind of slung into radio, which was fun for you and I, since we've done it for a while. But what I did want to talk about is the revelation of getting older sort of hitting me between the eyes more recently, I think since COVID. Now, you know my background. The only reason I'm not working in radio is COVID. I retired, not retired, I left a morning gig and formed the station. And without getting into the details, I got knocked out of the box. But at any rate, I have to make this personal because other people our age can share it or not. I'm going to be 72. And without the least bit of, I'm not going to be falsely humble. I'm in very good shape for my age. I still play competitive hockey with people that are 30 plus. And that just talks about the physical.
Your grandson.
I write. Yeah, I played 4 tournaments with him. I write. I do the radio. I do some TV. I fill in here and there. I still do fill-in radio for Westchester Talk Radio. I appear on this show with someone I admire. And quite frankly, I ain't done yet. And when I went, even when I went to WDOX.
But you think there's an expiry date, you know, with people like you?
No, but there is no expiry
date.
No, but people look at us like there is sometimes. Like, now, when you apply for a job, now, I actually have 3 now because I've had some success. But again, even there, I've had to take advantage of who I knew. In one case, the radio gig. But actually, in both, and one, the other one, I was on a board. But again, only in that case, knowing people helped because they knew my skills, not my age. But now, you apply for a job online, they actually ask for your birthday. So you don't even have a shot. But my point is. And this is open-ended, folks. I am being opinionated, but there are opinions that ought to be rendered towards my position, quite frankly, because I realize there are older people. Maybe they can't get to work. Maybe they don't have the vigor that they once had. But if that's the case, that's the case. It should be separated from their age. I'm made to feel
because
older.
You know, the system doesn't permit that. Because, you know, not everybody who is 70 or 75 or 80 are lucid, and some are even into their 90s and even beyond. And so it's very difficult for someone. Can you imagine getting a 25-year-old to interview you for a job? You know, it just doesn't cut it. You know, so.
Well, plus most 25-year-olds don't have to do
an interview
anyway.
It is a younger. Well, that usually is the case because it takes them time to become seasoned in their job as well. So it's a demeaning process. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people with the intellectual capacity to do it, but most people don't have the time or the inclination. So they look at you and, well, I'm good looking, but then so are you. So it doesn't look like we've aged to 72. Except you haven't hit the number yet. Neither have I.
It's coming.
So the bottom line is we're very close. So the bottom line is it depends on how good you look, and even if you're on radio and nobody sees who you look like, but there's so much that goes with it. You know, your image is thrown on the media, and Bob Marone or. This is Hezzy Harris or whatever.
Hezzy, fortunately, on the air, that's another reason to love radio. If you're good, you're good. people forget how old you are. They don't care, especially if you
right.
because they can sense your energy and your intellect. TV less.
So can I say I'm 35?
Seasons. No, but they won't care. Yours has the hours. The same thing with writing. If you can write, you can write. In fact, that's how I got the job I'm most proud of now. Because of my experience and background, it's perfect to do PR for what I'm doing the PR job for with those wonderful people over at Choice. But the point I'm getting at really is a little, it's even more, it's like trying to fit into clothes that don't fit anymore. And it takes you a while to realize it. But the point I'm getting at, it is imposed. It's not chosen. And that's been a surprise to me, I think, because of how
well,
I feel.
Well, actually,
it's
very interesting you bring that up because I used to wear much bigger sizes, but my cardiologist told me to back off. And then he has an associate, and I find her to be the most attractive nursing aide ever in the world I've ever seen. First of all, she's very tall. And,
here we go,
she's of Oriental descent, and I find her to be so stunning, and she's got a great personality, and she keeps me in check. Whatever she wants is what I'll do. So actually, you know, like it's a one-way street. What can I tell you? So I've lost weight. Can you imagine? I'm down to a 34-inch waist. I couldn't believe
it
myself.
Wow, you must look like a human being now.
I do. You know, and I didn't look that way when I was 16. So there is life,
goodness.
Even at the end of the line.
This is, folks, I am the guest on this show, so I don't have the dump button if he goes off the rails. But,
okay.
Yes. No, I do get this. No, but you know what? But the other point is, yeah, we actually do date folks. We say, well, I'm otherwise hitched, but we date. We actually do the S word. But no, and I know this sounds like a harangue. I feel great, and I don't have any regrets about it. But I am annoyed about it because I do wear both hats. For example, now I'm going to be 72, okay, and I have absolutely no problem. Had when I turned 70, in fact, this is where truth matters, folks. When I turn 70 and everybody else who turns 70, maybe it's 75, you should have to take a driver's test again. I thoroughly agree with all that. Everything that's age, because you have to deal with reality. This is the balance that we've lost in the political sphere. If most of the crime
that's why
is
we're
able to color... Right, but if most of the crimes are in areas of color, it's sad but true, you do have to have more police, and it's not racist. If a lot of people over 70 have accidents, and we know it, you got to take a look at that. That's not profiling, that's just common sense. But at the end of the day, if I pass my test, screw you, I can do everything everybody else does. But no, it's even more subtle than that. Now, these are the ways where it's just too bad for we older folks. Younger people have come up with ways to multitask. I think sometimes it may impede their success, but they're brilliant at it, and we have to fit in or die at our peril.
Well, I want you to know an old girlfriend. I remember her to this day. She used to tell me that I do not have the capacity to multitask, and she tells me that men have no capacity to do that. I used to not believe her to understand that she's probably right. And it's become evident more so at my older age that I can't do something at once.
Let me cover something. Do you know why that is? Now,
I have
no
clue.
As you know.
My genitalia? What is it? I don't understand.
No. As you know. I have dated a younger woman for a considerable amount of time, somewhat younger. And one of the things that person's learned from me, is that anything
like
you've ever accomplished at the point of execution was done linearly.
Okay, that went right over my head. What does that mean?
Mean? When you multitask, if you switch and you go on your phone, take every text that comes in as you get it, take every phone call as you get it, and don't prioritize it to later on, okay?
Uh-huh.
Yes, you got to it, but you got to it less effectively. If it was urgent, you didn't. This
Correct.
Is something I let's remember, I ran a management school in my past life for Merrill Lynch.
Uh-huh.
Multitasking means being able to manage people in that context. Manage people, manage things, know technology, plan, organize, lead, and control, do all those multitasks. But the great executive learns at the end of the day, you use delegation, you use assignments, and things of that, and you use your technology to put the things you multitask in their proper place so that when you get to them, they've grown. So multitasking isn't the ability to just work in a chaotic state. An airline pilot multitasks, but he never lands at the same time he takes off. He never, or she, never adjusts the speed of the airplane while he's thinking about, he has something else assigned or a co-pilot to do it. You can mm-hmm. only execute one thing at a time. You use technology or others. So what's been lost.
Well, I do that now. I used to do it all in my head.
Lost, right?
And there was nothing I ever forgot.
Why do
but
you
I can't
think
do
you
that
need
anymore?
A planning book. A planning book is ultimately what converts all these things into being linear. Now, if you have a meeting with a lawyer tomorrow, write up your paper. Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing today. Prepare everything. Send the lawyer
right.
his copy. Write the lawyer's name in your book at the proper time and move on. And,
right.
and if any of she teaches it's right. And there's that's lost. But that's not to criticize young people because eventually they'll learn it. But what I'm saying is there is something to be gained from both. And some things are time-honored, and I'm sure people have been saying this for eons, but some things are time-honored. When you have, I coach
the only problem is
number.
the only problem is that we're not taught these tricks so that we will be adjusted to them when we start to wane and have a lack of capacity to remember everything. And I
yes.
used to reside there very comfortably because there was nothing I ever forgot, ever. And but
oh,
I would
you,
say
you can't rely
last,
on that when you get older, right?
Well, now
That's,
I can't.
Yeah.
So now all I do is I immediately every time something needs to be done, I stick it into the notice. And I write myself a notice and with the name and the assignment so that I look through that every day now just to see if I covered all the bases. And if not, then it'll
yeah.
be the following day.
Right. But yes. But what I was saying is sometimes
so that's the only way for me to compensate for my
planning,
lack of capacity.
Whether you're using a Cray computer, whether you are using your iPhone, Whether you're using a massive amount of computing power, you still have to plan, mm-hmm. organize, lead, and control, and you can achieve stuff through chaos. You have to. You can make your chaos. You can scramble your eggs. Now, again, I have a mm-hmm. fortunate background where that was a discipline I had to learn and then develop courses for it. But what I'm saying mm-hmm. is that stuff is still useful. And it has nothing to do with the age that you're at or I'm at. And I do, I don't even know that I have.
Well, that's why we should teach it. We should teach it at a younger age. We don't teach it. And we should, even before technology came in to make it easier. But we should have showed people how to prioritize and how to make lists
mm-hmm.
and check off everything that was resolved.
And how to interview.
Do you know
that we spent,
don't
we hired
have no
psychologists.
Clue. They don't have an interest. They don't have an
no,
interest.
We,
they don't have knowledge.
We hired psychologists, PhDs, and think tanks
uh-huh.
to help us put together a course on how to properly interview people. And, man, in
okay.
every situation I've ever been in as an adult, I always tell people, because I do coach a lot of younger folks, you go on an interview, if the idiot says, tell me about yourself. That's because they've never been trained to do an interview. And so now what you have to do is know what the key things are that they don't even know they're looking for to say. So you manage your own interview. But it's actually pretty simple, the formula for an interview. And yet People don't know how to do it. Look, that's just reality, and we all have to face that. But even the inside
it's
of
it's not a reality. The problem is our educational system sucks, and we don't teach people the rudimentary things that they need to know.
No,
if they
incorporate
it later on in life, that's different. But hopefully they will. But if they're aware of what they can do, they can also better compensate for their deficiencies as we get older. Well, that's
you're
what it's all about.
You're speaking to my soul. Because I know, but my career, Merrill. No, you're not missing anything. But there is an answer to what you said. One of the reasons I got to build this beautiful training school, it was the second best thing I've ever done in my life other than radio. Before I went into straight communications, I ran the Maryland Training School. I loved that job.
Gay communications? Is there a difference? Like, what does that mean?
No, Merrill Lynch, we had a train. No, but this is the point. It was one of the finest trading houses in the world. But what we realized is we were getting candidates that were half-baked. We had two things. One, we had to teach people the jobs that we have, because in a large corporate entity, jobs require their own skill sets. So you need to do what any other school does. You need to have all the basic things, and then you grow up at levels of sophistication and complexity. What you need in a large dispersed organization is the management training needs to be cohesive so we're all playing on the same page. But the net of it is...
But isn't that their job, that they need to hire the people that conform to their standards?
Yes, but no. What you do is you hire for proclivity and experience and skill if you have it, but my point is you need to be able to teach the skills if people have the proclivity. And particularly for management, what you said, it's very interesting.
No one's got the time and the money to retrain people who supposedly have a degree.
Maybe that's why it costs so much money
to call up a broker who doesn't know shit from Shinola.
If I hire you, no one gets management training. MBAs are cute accountants. They're gifted accountants.
Okay.
They're not trained to manage people. It's my biggest beef with MBA programs, because they don't teach management skills. And my point is that you run an assessment center, and the assessment centers are cool. Now you can do them with – I'll tell you what the basic is, since you run your own business. You take and this is how, again, you assess for proclivity. Proclivity means an innate skill that you already have that we can polish. So this to me was always the best thing we did in the assessment center. We had psychologists put this together for us, but it had a practical app. Now, for the sake of our discussion, you could do this on a computer as well, but it's best understood using an old-fashioned box. You get the call. You're at X level in a company. Hey, Hezzy, we got a promotion for you. You're moving up. You're going to take Joe Blow's. You're with the Chicago Tribune. You're going to edit. You're going to take on the education desk here. You've got 40 people. You've got 5 supervisors who report to you. But here's the deal. Joe Blow passed away yesterday over the weekend. You've got to take his job. Now, he's giving a speech in 24 hours in Tampa. You've got to get on that plane and give a speech for him. You've got 24 hours to go through his inbox, prioritize and assign the work, and then put a list together of what you're going to do when you get back.
Okay.
And then we put you on the clock. So right now we got stress tolerance that we're already testing. Now we have your ability to absorb the work and to interpret what's there. We've given you a profile of each person that reports to you who does what. So now under the gun, okay, and it's an abstract. We do it in a way where you don't need to be a so-called expert at it per se. And we can measure, and then we go over the inbox when you're done. Did he finish? Did he get the speech prepared? Was he or she able to see what were the most important things there? So those are the kinds of things before we even train you, we test for. And then you get that guy or gal, and you put them through training that involves how to manage people, groups of people, organizational that, and you got yourself a winner, not some Yahoo. Okay, and here's the equivalent we used to use. Just because you're a great sniper, we don't make you a general. There are generals who could, probably couldn't shoot straight, but are great generals. It's the difference between a maestro and a band performer. Anyway, the reason I'm getting into it is the good companies will always have a relationship with a college or their own training school to refine the skills of their people so that you can move them about the company and they all play by the same rules.
I hate to tell you that was the old days, and we don't have that relationship anymore. And there's a disconnect between business and education. And
absolutely,
our educational standards have waned to such an extent,
yep,
that we have a deficiency in the number of people that we're putting out the front door,
yes,
when they graduate.
Yes, and it's
and
also
that's the fault
why,
of business. That's the fault of,
yes,
business.
Because
business never
of business.
Kept the relationship
you see my
going.
Good and
exactly.
Bad. I was successful at Merrill Lynch, and I worked there 33 years. And it was,
mm-hmm,
such a huge organization, I moved up and across several times.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter is a very successful microbiologist and is the lead microbiologist for a subsidiary. She's worked in 5 companies in 15 years. The companies are not loyal to them, and they're not loyal to the companies. Everything is, if you will, what are you going to do for me today? And the problem is that companies don't have institutional memory anymore. They don't have characterizations. And I've seen companies destroyed by this. And it works, I guess, today. So I'm going to call it different. But what we don't see, we see people who can't write. We see people who are terrible communicators.
It's actually faltering.
People.
Don't you understand?
Yeah.
It's faltering.
Yeah.
It's falling apart. And it shows a diminution of our capacity as a nation, industrially, technologically, and intellectually. And those are the problems.
Well, Hezzy, I've said this on the air for 20 years, and I will say it again. And at the end of my Merrill Lynch career, where I'll tell you, Merrill, and I talk about this openly. None of this is libel. I've had the Merrill Lynch, Pearson, and Smith, once a year I have Wynn Smith on, and we talk about how Merrill died. Merrill,
mm-hmm,
died because it lost its ethics. It lost its principles. And we went from a company where honesty and openness was valued to a company where sincerity was considered a trait you shouldn't trust. And that's why,
yeah,
Merrill
Lynch
died.
That's not just Merrill. It's not just Merrill.
No, I know.
And
no,
it's
but,
not just Wall Street.
No,
it's
but it's
everything.
An autopsy. Yes, but it's an autopsy, Hezzy, of a disease,
yeah,
that is rampant. And,
well, that's all
and
fine
you,
and good, but we've known that for the last 25 years. And what have we done,
yes,
about
we
it? The answer is very
no,
little. Very little.
Yeah, because our system doesn't know
well,
how to deal
ethics,
with it.
That's why we don't have ethical standards. We don't teach it, and we don't get it, because nobody's
okay.
going to be able to come up with it on their own.
Here's the big truth behind it all.
Okay.
These things are prevalent, these maladies, if you will, because
uh-huh.
they work.
Mm-hmm.
People do what works, Hezzy.
How do they work? How do they work?
They work for the people
what's
in power.
Working? What's working?
No, no.
Oh, they work for
the
people
in power.
They're corrupted
yes.
by the people in power because
yes.
they suck up to them, and that's the job. They're paying. They're doing. They're
so
getting paid, and
matters.
They're getting paid to suck up. That's
yes.
it.
Yes.
So where
leadership
are the ethics?
Matters,
there are no ethics.
There are.
Well,
no,
we don't have
ethics.
Leadership.
Nope.
That's the problem.
But,
do you know? You know how difficult it is to follow an ethical standard.
The worst thing you want to be is in a corporate America today. And I have this out even with Harlan Ullman, who's a very ethical. He teaches at the Naval War College. He's a chief advisor to NATO and all that. And he doesn't agree with
okay.
me on this, but I've worked in more corporations than him, and he's been at the top of them. He's a very ethical man, Harlan. Very ethical. And unfortunately, like a lot of ethical people at the top, and there are so few, he thinks it's widespread. And I tell him, the worst thing you can be in corporate America today is sincere. You will not be trusted. It's the Trumpism thing. What they want you to be loyal and to spout any lie. The only difference, there's another secondary thing that's in corrupt. People, and this is awful to say, but I'm going to say this, people who didn't grow up with street ethics who become cutthroat make one mistake. In the streets of Brooklyn, where I grew up, if you wanted to do something, someone to do something untoward, you let them in on it. If you wanted their loyalty, you had them in on it. But what you find in corporate America today is they will put you in a position where the only solution for you is to lie for them, but they won't let you in on it so that they can blame you. These are how the
yuppies do. No, oh, come on. This is so corrupt what you're talking about. I'm sorry.
It is corrupt.
It is not. No, I know the system is corrupt, but that's not your only option to suck up to them because you've been outmaneuvered. You can get another job. You can find something else to do.
Yes, and that is what people do.
People capitulate.
No,
they don't. They
capitulate. No, but I'm telling you, most people don't go get the other job.
Look at government, and you'll see capitulation from top to bottom because everyone wants a paycheck, and that's all they want. They want a job. Mm-hmm. They want security, and they will suck up to whomever is in charge, whether they're right or wrong, whether they're legal or illegal, whether they're ethical or not. You're painting a picture. Well, there's only one way. No, there isn't one way.
No, you have to stand up more strongly.
I
used the wrong paint. You're using
the
wrong paint.
Well, hey,
that's what I'm here for. God, please. Yes, you're absolutely right. I'm painting the picture in the hopes that people will see that if we get ethical people at the top,
only if you get prodded to get off your high horse and explain it, because that's the problem in today's world. We explain the issue. We don't explain how to remedy it, and we don't explain why to remedy it. And what the issues are that are causing the corruption and diminution
of our capacity. This is like a good book, Kazi. You got to turn to the next page. Of course I know how to do it.
I thought it was the next chapter. So where do we go from here? Or is that next week's show?
God, I hate him. God, please.
Yes, you can.
72-year-old men wrestling in Yonkers. Actually, it can be fixed. And it can be fixed. But now here is the cynical part. People first need to understand that as much as there's a book we used to use in training. We actually had a great subtitle called "You Oughta Gotta Wanna," and it says you oughta wanna do the right nice thing, and it just doesn't work. People need an incentive. They just need to know what the right thing is.
They don't need an incentive. Why? Their job is their
incentive.
If you don't like the job, then don't take the job.
No, Tezzy, being honest, being sincere, working hard, and it needs to be valued. It's not valued in corporate America anymore. And so corporate America needs to change the way it operates.
Unfortunately, we don't have too much time, but unfortunately, I know for 22 years I've been in Yonkers, and it's been a rough ride to such an extent where I have to dismiss government and the BS that comes from there and decipher what's really going on my own. I need sources other than government because government wants to cover it all up. And the point is they've been deleterious not only to themselves but to everybody else. But they don't realize that still. But I'm ethical, and that's my brand. Ethics, standards, and credibility. And that was your standard as well. It's the difference. And you didn't capitulate to some onerous guy that said, no, that's not the way what I want or when I want it or how I want it. You got to break the rules here, there, and everywhere. Okay, that's the difference.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I've never mentioned this on the air.
But we could save that till next week.
You know what the most principled thing I've ever done in my life?
No clue.
Was after 9/11, I was out having surgery.
10 seconds, we're going to have to save this. We've got 10 seconds, you're going to shut us
down. Oh, this is great, a cliffhanger. I love it.
Absolutely.
Talk next week,
so are you
going
to be on next week at 11 or 11:30?
Yes, I am, and I'm going to talk about wherever you want me, 11. But
okay.
I'm going to be talking next week, too, about a woman that has to go in for some very special surgery that I'd like to help. We'll do that again next week. And then I will give you the next phase in my organizational creation. Thank you, Hezzy. It's been a pleasure.
Be well. All the best. Take care. Bye.
Take care.
Here we are, folks. We've got to go. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Bye.